Greetings, everyone, and welcome to our weekly podcast on legal issues in the post-COVID world. My name is Gil Porter, a partner at Haynes & Boone and chair of our COVID-19 task force. Today is Thursday, May 14, and we have a fantastic panel of guests who will discuss some of the legal and safety issues that hospitality companies, in this case restaurants, need to consider as they ramp up their operations following one of the worst shockwaves in industry history. We have a guest moderator today, Christina Marshall, who is a Dallas-based partner in our M&A practice group and advises clients on a wide range of business transactions. In addition to her experience in private practice, she served as the executive vice president and chief legal officer of a Dallas-based company that owns more than 200 restaurants nationwide. The first of our panelists is Julie Juvera, vice president of crew relations at Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, which has 500 restaurants, mostly in the U.S. Julie has spent 24 years in the restaurant industry. Accompanying her on the panel will be Matt Deffenbach, a returning guest. Matt is a partner in our labor and employment practice group and is chair of our firm's OSHA practice. I will turn this over to Christina in a moment, but first, our usual disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only, is not intended to be legal advice, and does not establish an attorney-client relationship. By its very nature, the topics we discuss on these podcasts are fast-moving and subject to change. Legal advice of any nature should be sought from your legal counsel. Christina, I'm turning it over to you.
Thanks so much, Gil. I'm very excited to be here and to be able to share this information with the restaurant community. I've represented restaurants throughout my legal career, and I have been so impressed with the response that restaurants have had to this pandemic. After getting over the initial shock, I saw restaurants come together and they immediately pivoted to takeout and delivery. And I know that they're going to be able to pivot again and really be able to do the reopening and just as great process. I'm really excited to talk with the panel today. I know that there is incredible pent-up demand among patrons for dine-in and takeout in their favorite restaurants, and I know that they're really anxious to get back in their dining room and see the servers that they have relationships with. And I know that the industry is really eager to accommodate these patrons, but they need to do so safely, and they need to consider these various legal issues and best practices that we're going to talk about today. And so I want to talk with Julie and Matt about some of these legal issues and best practices, and we'll get both the practical experience from Julie's perspective and then the legal requirements from Matt. So Matt, I want to start with you by asking about restaurant safety issues amid the pandemic. Where should restaurants look for legal guidance on best practices?
Thanks, Christina. When it comes to safety and best practice guidance, it certainly starts with OSHA. And while OSHA's guidance is somewhat limited, a restaurant employer would want to look at and ensure it has an understanding of what OSHA is saying about assessing employee exposure and possible recommended safety controls. And this comes down to the employer's duty to provide its employees a safe workplace under what's called OSHA's General Duty Clause, or equivalent state OSHA programs. So a long, long, long time ago, early March, OSHA issued a document that describes risk categories of employees and associated controls based on these categories, things that we consider engineering or administrative or personal protective equipment controls. And it also has issued some guidance for restaurants offering takeout service and recommended safety practices. And then the other big heavy in terms of sort of guidance is the CDC. And OSHA has certainly looked to the CDC. And while there's not a specific document on all restaurant operations currently, employers may find it useful to see some of the detail that OSHA and the CDC put into their guidance on safety controls at meat processing plants, as several of the concepts are applicable to any employer, including restaurants. And then I'd say next, to get more into the weeds, look at the various trade association materials, whether national or state restaurant associations, international franchise association, and related trade materials that will really help with the specifics as to restaurants. And then the final word to note is don't forget to make sure to look at what might be mandatory safety controls from the state or local return to work executive orders.
Great. Thanks so much, Matt. I really appreciate that. Julie, can you share some practical thoughts with us about these safety challenges that restaurants are facing today when they resume operations? For example, how is Raising Cane's navigating these challenges?
Thank you, Christina. Absolutely. It would be my pleasure. You know, I think this is a great question because the restaurant business, it's a social business, not only for our employees, but also for the patrons. However, pandemic or not, our responsibility in the restaurant industry is to always provide both a safe work environment for our crew and a safe dining experience for our customers. It's our responsibility. It's our obligation to those in our communities to do everything we can every single day to serve a safe dining experience. They trust us, and we need to honor and respect this trust. So how do we do this, especially now during the pandemic and beyond? I believe it's a three-pronged approach. It starts with, number one, the highest levels of sanitization and cleanliness. This includes things like frequent hand washing. In our restaurants at Raising Cane's, we require our crew to wash their hands every 10 minutes and in between tasks, in addition to wearing their gloves. We also clean and disinfect workstations multiple times throughout the day, at times 3 to 4 times per hour. When we decide to start reopening our dining rooms, we are very honored and fortunate to be a drive-through business, and we have been able to stay open during this time. But when we do make that decision to open our dining rooms, we will have a dedicated person, and their sole responsibility is going to be cleaning and sanitizing every single table in the dining room. That's important not only for us and our crew, but also for the customers that will be out there. Our customers need to see this and know we're committed to their health and safety. We're also going to have sanitizer available for our customers in the dining room. The second thing we're going to do is limit exposure points, and every restaurant company needs to be doing this. We need to be thinking about everywhere customers and crew might have cross-contamination points. We in our restaurants have self-serve stations, and so we're going to be pivoting with single-use ketchup, cups, plates, etc. We're not going to have platters. We're putting up sneeze guards, plexiglass. Many restaurants are doing this as well. Other restaurants, and I highly recommend many people do this if you aren't doing this already, we're going to be doing it, which is contactless payment options, mobile ordering. And for those full service and fine dining restaurants, you really need to be thinking about menus. Think about how many times people are touching those menus, and are there better ways to maybe go digital with the menu so that that's contactless? Lastly, it's social distancing. Customers, you know, from an operations perspective, we need to take action to prevent the temptation for our customers. We need to remove tables in the dining room and space them apart. We need to place signs on the tables reminding them to remain 6 feet or more apart from each other. Additionally, in our restaurants, we're going to put stickers on the floor showing the customers where to stand while waiting in line. There are many options out there. And for full service restaurants, they need to be thinking about the host to stand. They also need to be thinking about customers waiting for tables and options for them, waiting in their car, maybe guidance to space them while they wait. You know, for our crew, this is tough because our crew, they naturally need to be closer than 6 feet in order to perform their jobs. That's just how their job works. So what can we do to protect them, to also support them in their role? That's where PPE comes in. Masks, provide them masks, provide them gloves, space them when appropriate, and really truly be creative in how to protect our crew as they work in their restaurants every day. You know, the worst case scenario here is that a customer or crew becomes diagnosed and they name our restaurants as the exposure point, because that's when our communities and our crew lose faith and trust in us. And that's almost an insurmountable challenge for any of us to overcome. So we must take every precaution at this time. And the cost of doing this right now, it is minimal compared to the potential loss of business by not taking any measures.
Well, thank you so much, Julie. That was incredibly helpful. Matt, to follow up with what Julie was just talking about and about social distancing, you know, for a lot of restaurants, this is going to be really hard, not only for the crew, but also the customers. And, you know, it's going to be hard to remove tables. And so restaurants, I think, are going to have to really focus on this and think very hard about how they could comply with these requirements. So from a legal perspective, what guidance does OSHA provide about these social distancing spacing controls for both coworkers and for customers?
Sure. And OSHA certainly recognizes that it is part of what are considered safe work practices, a form of administrative control. And you're right. And I think Julie's dead on. It is tough in the restaurant setting for the employees, the associates working, just given the nature of the work. And so I think it's important to note that while OSHA recognizes that it is a control, it also recognizes that not all controls are feasible. And so while a restaurant should emphasize social distancing when it can, as much as possible, and certainly for customers, this is exactly to Julie's point, where an employer should double down on other efforts, you know, whether it's the good sanitation practices that Julie mentioned, or using personal protective equipment, or using masks, whatever it can be, to try to show that there are alternative controls, safety controls to keep employees safe. And I think one of the things that's really prudent for employers, and OSHA recommends this as well, is when you go through and sort of analyze what is it that we're going to do, and if social distancing doesn't get it all the way there, to document why and sort of describe, here's our assessment of what is feasible, what we can do, and here are where certain things may not be feasible, where we can't fully rely on social distancing. We recognize that. And so here are the other controls that we're going to put in place. I think that's an important way to think about it, in the fact that there are limitations on certain controls.
Thank you, Matt. So Matt, I want to follow up on what you were saying. Let's assume that you do implement and execute a, you know, gold standard safety plan, but you still have a suspected or a confirmed case of COVID-19 that involves one of your employees or your patrons. What do you do?
Right. And so I'll walk through the legal steps, and certainly Julie can help us on the practical side of it. I think, you know, the first thing is you have to disinfect the area. You know, that is first and foremost. You look for the CDC recommendations that are out there that really inform us that a restaurant would close off the area that was used by the patron or the employee. You want to the extent possible, really have a good ventilation of that area. So if you have the ability to open doors and windows, increase air circulation, that's great. The CDC advises employers to wait 24 hours before cleaning or disinfecting. But in some circumstances, if 24 hours is not feasible, the CDC notes to wait as long as possible. So that's the first step. Disinfect, get the area clean. Number two, you're going to need to address, particularly obviously with an employee, notifying other coworkers or even with a patron, notifying those that may have been servicing the patron if it's known, so that they understand that they've had potential exposure. And obviously we want to be very sensitive in terms of privacy, particularly with employees, informing other employees. If we can avoid it at all informing who the individual is, we want to do that to respect the privacy of the person that may be infected. And then obviously, have a plan. How are you going to address those that may have been exposed? Are you going to ensure and enforce that they self-quarantine for 14 days to be safe? And then the next thing is think about if it's an employee who's sick, those that maybe they're self-quarantining, look at the law. Do you have any legal obligations to pay for this period of time under the Family First Coronavirus Response Act if you're less than 500 employees? Or is there some other provided leave? Is it a workers' comp situation? And then think about that to make sure that employees are provided appropriate leave, or are they using PTO or other resources? And then the final thing is manage the return to work when you're dealing with employees. You know, employers should be familiar with the CDC recommendations that someone who has had potential exposure, the time that they should be self-isolating, making sure that they've had, you know, they've been 7 days without symptoms, that they've met the other criteria, and then obviously think about bringing them back and be practical about that. You may think it's prudent to have a doctor's note that the employee is fit to return. The EEOC has said that is proper, but in some cases it may be hard for employees to get those sort of notes if healthcare providers are still dealing with COVID-19 matters. So I think be flexible and obviously think about that return to work part as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Matt. That's very helpful. Julie, you're the head of your COVID-19 task force for your company. And I've had the fortune of watching you implement your process and execute your process. And it truly is, you know, what I would consider a gold standard process. And you've been at it for several months now. So to the extent that you guys have experienced any suspected or confirmed cases of COVID-19, from a practical perspective, how do you handle it?
Great question, Christina. And really, we have taken into not only the practicality of running our restaurants, but also the legal matters that Matt also referenced earlier. But in addition to that, you know, Raising Cane's, we've always blazed our own trail, and this was no different from us. And so the most important takeaway, I think, not only for us, but anybody else, is that you need to take action. Not taking action if you have a suspected case or a case is simply not an option at this time. For us at Raising Cane's, from the very beginning, when there were less than 30 cases in the country, so think about that. Many people were even hesitant, is this going to impact us or not? Less than 30 cases in the country, we knew three things. And number one, we knew we needed to anticipate, we knew we needed to adapt, and then we knew we needed to act. So we anticipated from the start. We anticipated that this would not only impact us, we thought about the potential exponentiality of it, and we knew it was inevitable. So we committed at that time that we were going to take an approach that was above and beyond not only what the CDC was requiring, but what the World Health Organization was setting, and also what the restaurant industry standards were discussing as well. With that, we immediately put into effect a multidimensional, a multifunctional system and processes to address all of the pending health crisis for our 25,000 crews. So this included, we immediately started with daily health surveys for all of our crew. We had 25,000 crew out there. We knew we needed to know, were they healthy? Were they coming in contact? Were they traveling? And what were they doing? And so we, at the beginning of every single shift, we put a health survey in front of every single one of them. To date, we have had over 300,000 of these surveys come through. We also instituted an incident reporting process with any health or travel-related matters being escalated quickly. At this time, to support all of this, we shifted 150 restaurant support office crew into roles supporting all of these calls and the escalation process. Additionally, because everything in this process, because we're dealing with the health and the safety of our crew, our customers, and our communities, we wanted to let everybody know how important this was, that any and all potential COVID diagnosis or even direct contact cases, and that's when a crew member comes in contact with someone who is positively diagnosed, every single one of these cases was going to be reviewed by myself and the co-CEO of our company, AJ Kumaran. Both he and I, throughout the entire process over the past 70 days, have made every decision on any next steps that will happen in any of these cases. So what do? If someone is diagnosed, we immediately close the restaurant. And I'm telling you, this happens within 30 minutes of our confirming that someone is diagnosed. We immediately close the restaurant and we quarantine all exposed crew for 14 days with pay. Now, if someone comes in direct contact, we quarantine all second degree contact crew for 14 days with pay. Now, for those of you that are familiar, you know that is above and beyond what the CDC recommends. In fact, I've personally spoken with health department officials across the United States who have told me that I am going above and beyond and I don't need to do that. At which time I have told them the reason our restaurants are still open is because we have taken these additional measures, and we are proud to do that every single day. In both of these situations, we also conduct a biohazard clean inside of the restaurant. So we make sure everything in the restaurant is clean. We make sure our crew are safe. We make sure they're whole by paying them. And we make sure everybody in the situation is whole, clean, safe, everything is sanitized, and we're doing the right thing all around. In order to limit exposure, because you can start thinking now, wow, you're quarantining a lot of people, we implemented block scheduling across our organization. So what does that mean? That means that all of our restaurants, our managers and our crew are now placed into a block where they only work with those designated crew members moving forward. So they no longer switch shifts and no longer work with opposing crew members on opposite blocks. Therefore, if someone is diagnosed or if someone is exposed, the only people that will be quarantined are those on the block. And then we have a protected block that can now still work and keep the restaurant open moving forward once the restaurant's been open. Another additional measure that we put into place to limit any exposure in our restaurants is we did something where we limited the number of restaurants that people could be designated to. We have many multi-unit restaurant positions, whether that's a multi-unit restaurant leader, whether that's people who support multi-units, et cetera. We limited them to one restaurant. They are no longer able to visit more than one restaurant to limit exposure or what we call cross-pollination. Now, once again, I realize not everybody can follow the same process or this approach by going above CDC guidelines or going above and beyond the restaurant industry standards. I get that. I respect that. However, doing nothing at this time, it just isn't an option. So I encourage everybody, anybody out there, to put a process in place to find out if anybody is sick, if anybody has come in contact. This is to protect you, to protect your employees, to protect the customers and your brand, to make sure that you're limiting any risk or any potential exposure out there. Put a plan in place and address it as soon as you find out.
Wow. Thank you, Julie. That was incredibly helpful. You know, it is incredible what Raising Cane's has done in response to this pandemic. And you guys have clearly implemented so many new health and safety policies and procedures to follow to ensure the safety of your crew and your guests. And it's just incredible. And we definitely applaud you for your efforts. But, you know, going forward after the pandemic and the post-pandemic world, what do you think the industry will look like in 12 or 18 months? Do you think that the safety protocols today are going to be best practices going forward, or do you think that we'll revert to pre-pandemic restaurants?
Great question. Great question. One thing I do know is true is the restaurant industry is strong and it will thrive. It will continue to thrive. The people who work in the restaurant industry are some of the strongest, most resilient, dedicated, hardworking people I have ever met in my life, and they will find a way through. So I'd love to be able to look into the future. Alas, I cannot. But what I can tell you is I believe there are going to be some components that will remain forever in place. It's going to be a new normal that everybody is going to have to really accept and adjust to. There are also things that I think people are going to quickly forget, that whether you go out now and you may feel it's normal now, I believe they're going to be a bygone and everybody's going to quickly forget it. We're all human. And as humans, we all need social interaction and we all need food. And these two come together naturally in restaurants. So what do I think is here to stay? I think the cleanliness, sanitization standards, the expectations for restaurants to uphold those standards, to have contactless features in process, to come up with more creative ways to limit exposure throughout the entire dining experience, I think a lot of that is here to stay. In addition, a lot more takeaway, mobile experiences, et cetera, will come into effect. Now, I think the lines are going to blur a little bit more, and we're going to need some more systems and processes in place. And what do I mean by that? Pre-COVID, crew members, managers, et cetera, would get the flu, would get sick, and they'd call in and they'd go home. We'd keep them out of the restaurant. Now that we've gotten into this COVID environment, I believe there are going to be more processes required of us to track and make sure that these people no longer are in the restaurant if they are sick, similar to the COVID processes that we have in place. I believe there's going to be some new tracking processing and assurances that nobody sick is in the restaurant for not only our crew members, but also the public. I also believe what I think is the most important thing that will never change is I believe that people will still come together. I still believe the customers will come into our restaurants. I believe the tables will get closer together. I believe servers will still go to tables. They will talk to the customers. I believe people will hug. I believe they'll shake hands. And I believe that they will still come together in that social manner. But they will rely on us to continue to serve safe food. They will rely on us to make sure it is a very clean and safe environment. And they will rely on us to make sure that their experience in the restaurant is a positive and safe environment.
Great. Thank you so much, Julie. And I just want to second what you said about the people who work in restaurants. They are just the most resilient and hardworking folks out there. And I totally agree with you. So I want to thank both of our panelists. You guys have been so helpful and informative. I really appreciate your time and the information that you've provided to us today. Gil, I'm going to hand it back to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Christina, Julie, and Matt for really a terrifically informative discussion. And thank you to our listeners for joining our COVID-19 podcast series. This week, we completed our three-part webinar series on issues and challenges in reopening for business, but we are going to continue our podcast focus on this topic for one more week, so stay tuned for next week. Our weekly webinar topic next Tuesday will return to a different subject, insurance issues and claims in the post-COVID world. As a reminder, you can find all of our podcast, webinars, and other content, including over 150 important summaries and updates on legal issues relating to the post-COVID world at haynesboone.com. That's HAYNESBOONE.com. You can also find our podcasts on most major platforms. Please also feel free to reach out to me or Nathan Koppel if you have any suggestions for further podcast topics. And that's it. Take care all and good night.